Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:54 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time, and today is December 5th. I thought we'd kick off today and talk a little bit about gold, because there was an interesting chart produced by Bloomberg today talking about central bank buying hitting a new high. We haven't seen highs like this in at least the last decade. In fact, they said that in the headline it was the highest quantity of gold being bought by central banks since Nixon's presidency, but they don't have data that goes back that far, at least on the terminal. But what it does suggest is that central banks are buying gold. It's an important source of demand. Most particularly, when central banks are buying, they're not selling, and they're some of the biggest holders of gold, and therefore that is restricting supply from the market. Occasionally, we do get periods of time when central banks are selling gold. They sold gold all the way through to 2017. It was when they stopped selling gold that gold started to pop on the upside. So they are an important arbiter of how prices perform. When we then go ahead and simply look at the gold price over the course of the last decade, it certainly helps if you put in the correct ticker, then we can see that it has completed a lengthy base formation, and it has so far at least sustained the breakout from that base formation. We are now seeing what is we tend to term a first step above the base. It's during the first step above the base that this big argument takes place. Are we simply seeing a short-term move? Certainly there are going to be people that say this is cyclical in nature. There are others going to say, well, this is much more important than that. It is a secular move, that the completion of a base formation suggests we're going to see prices move substantially higher from here. But generally people row in behind an argument like that when they have evidence to support it. In other words, the vast majority of investors approach a market when it has already done extraordinarily well. All we have to do is look at the kind of attention that the technology sector is getting today relative to the kind of convincing that investors needed when cloud computing first became a phenomenon back in 2012 and 2013. Talking about cloud computing back then was considered to be a rather risky topic. I remember when I wrote Crowd Money, I had a number of subscribers write to me and say, was I really sure that Salesforce was worthy of consideration as a viable potential member of the designation for a global corporate autonomy. My response was that we can't simply look at the past, that we have to look at the future, and that it does represent a potential winner and dominator of the cloud platform evolution. That was the exact same reason for supporting companies like Amazon and Google and Facebook. We needed to not just look at dividends, but growth potential and their dominance of their respective sectors. So that was an argument almost 8 years ago. Well, it's not an argument any longer because we have evidence. Of course, when you're arguing about it, it could go either way. You can obviously be wrong. But when you have evidence to back it up, then you also can make the argument that there is a rationale for investing. Well, now let's think about gold. Gold has just broken higher. A lot of people haven't yet really believed it. They continue to look at the fact that mine supply is still rising, that we're at almost record highs for mine supply, and therefore there is a doubt among people's minds as to whether gold can do better from here. But the base formation completion, the breakout, the formation of the first step above the base tells us one thing and one thing only, that there is a new bullish phenomenon and that people are willing to pay 7-year highs, 8-year highs for gold Whereas they were not willing to do that 7 or 8 months ago. That's exactly what a first step above the base in any asset class tells us. As long as the first step above the base is forming and the breakout holds, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. What's also, I think, rather interesting is when we look at not just the ratio. The ratio, I think, is really rather interesting. When we think about the performance of gold shares, they underperformed for 12 years. Well, I guess the peak was, let's say, in 2003, all the way through to the beginning of 2016. That is a phenomenally lengthy period of underperformance for any asset class, but most particularly in view of the fact that gold didn't peak until 2011. The reason that gold shares underperformed was because they were spending every available dollar at their disposal, whether they had it or not, whether they had to beg, borrow, or steal for additional capital, they did it in order to try and replace reserves that they hadn't been able to invest in for decades. That contributed to the underperformance of the asset class. There was this enormous argument when gold eventually did peak about the ability of these miners to produce cash flow. Our investors insisted or foisted upon the mining sector the necessity that they had to start producing all-in sustaining costs. What we're starting to see is that investors now want dividends. They want a return on their investment. Gold shares that produce a dividend are one of the things that make them attractive to investors because you want, or I think a lot of investors want to have a dividend, they want a return on equity, and they want to have a cash flow from a non-cash flow producing asset. And the only way to do that is to have shares that pay dividends. This is exactly the point in the cycle where gold shares should be doing better, and they are starting to outperform the gold price. But we haven't yet seen the gold miners ETF breaking on the upside. It is still within its own base formation. It's really going to be a sustained move above the $30 area will confirm the completion of the base in gold miners. The very fact that it has not yet broken out is testament to the fact that people are just not yet convinced of the new bull market in gold. When we then think about what's going on in terms of the wider stock market, well, the S&P 500 was in positive territory today, and so far it is sustaining this breakout above this 18-month, in fact, it's a little bit longer than 18 months range. This is not the first time it's done that. We've seen almost exactly the same phenomenon in 2016. We had the initial breakout, and the market came back then to test the region of the trend mean in a manner very similar to what we saw after that. Subsequently, we had a very persistent period of trending. That was also exactly the same phenomenon that we saw in 2012, where we had the breakout, then the market pulled back to the region of the trend mean. It did it again about 6 months later, and then we had a very persistent period of trending. Well, I'm posting a lot of different reports in here today to talking about the outlook for 2020. What is almost universally true is that people are looking at 2019 and projecting onto 2020 what has already happened in 2019. 2019 has been characterized by a great deal of uncertainty on the trade front. It's been characterized by a lot of uncertainty about the political process, whether that is in the USA, in the UK, in Germany, Chile, Hong Kong, or any number of a host of other countries. And these are all things that are constantly in the news, but also there is the continued polarity that we're seeing in how various issues are commented on. That's before we even begin to think about the presidential election next year and the growth in acceptance for a Green New Deal in Europe, the fact that it's become a central part of the Democrats' platform for the election in 2020. All of these are uncertainties that have really occupied people's minds and time in 2019. Against that background, what people seem to be paying less attention to is the fact that the Federal Reserve has increased the size of its balance sheet by $300 billion and continues to do so. So it's now at 4.05 trillion. Back in October, it was at 3.75. So this is a meaningful move. We're continuing to see additional stimulus being applied to the market. Then Japan announced today that they're implementing a 260 odd billion dollar stimulus that will at least offset part of the impact from raising consumption taxes. The UK is going to embark on additional fiscal stimulus. The only question is the size of the fiscal stimulus after its election. Germany's economy is on the cusp of recession. It's been just about eking or holding on with its fingernails from avoiding a recession. But then there's the question of how long is the administration there going to last? What you are starting to see is the SPD is looking at some kind of fiscal measures to blunt the impact of a slowing economy. So we're seeing fiscal stimulus coming across in a whole host of countries. The ECB is also engaged in quantitative easing. The Bank of Japan is engaged in quantitative easing. China so far has demurred from really pulling on the levers for growth, and growth is slowing down there. They are most acutely at risk from the trade war. It does suggest that if growth does continue to slow, they will have to stimulate. All of this additional stimulus, the fact that interest rates are coming down globally, all of that is contributing to additional liquidity getting pumped into the markets. This has been a liquidity-fueled bull market for much of the last decade. There's no reason to suggest that it isn't still a demand-dominated environment as long as we still have this liquidity fuel. That suggests that the breakout on the S&P could persist. Well, then let's take a look at Europe. The market did pull back rather sharply earlier this week, but it is off the lows. It's in the region of 400 for the Euro stocks, and 400 has been an historic area of resistance since 2015. So this is the upper side of a 4-year range, actually more like 5-year range. And as long as we're just getting a consolidation in the region of 400, then I think the balance of probabilities is that we are going to see a break on the upside. One of the defining characteristics of Europe over the course of the last few years has been the weakness of the euro. But the USA is systematically removing the supports for the dollar, and the euro has fallen a lot already. Generally speaking, we don't usually see these long-term trends in currencies, that they do tend to be the exception rather than the rule. Obviously, the almost decade-long advance in the Brazilian real was, during the commodity bull market, was an outlier. When we then think about the history of the euro dollar, you don't generally tend to get trends more than a couple of years. We are looking at a higher reaction low now for the euro. If it can sustain a move above 112 versus the dollar, then there is the real potential that this downtrend will be broken. And the pound has already broken its downtrend, and it was up in dynamic fashion over the course of this week so far, really popping above the 130 area in an impressive fashion. So that's also, I think, confirmation from the perspective of investors that a more benign outcome is likely to be delivered, particularly with the Conservative Party potentially going to regain a majority in Parliament. And that is, I think, one of the more positive outcomes. When we then think about the better performing indices in Europe, they're certainly within the mid-cap sector. The FTSE 250 is back testing its highs. It's off its lows in here this week. There is a short-term overbought condition. We could see some consolidation here, but it does look like we are going to see additional upside for this index. I think the most important thing about the UK is that it has been so heavily discounted by international investors that the potential for the pound to strengthen has now got the scope to start drawing people back into the market. What's also particularly interesting is that we're starting to see some of these property funds getting shuttered in the UK. This highlights, I think, a phenomenon that does have the potential to create problems for pensions and for private equity investors over the course of the next few years. One of the biggest demands by investors in the aftermath of the credit crisis was for instant liquidity. And when you're investing in property, it's very difficult to provide instant liquidity or end-of-day liquidity. Well, what's happening now is one of the GAM property funds, with about 2.5 billion invested, has had to stop redemptions. But one of the more important points is that this is going to have an impact on the selling price of properties in the UK. What's also apparent is that Brookstone and another partner are looking at acquiring student accommodation properties in the UK. Well, what that is suggesting is that they are looking at the relative discount that the UK is trading at and starting to think, well, this is probably an opportune time to be investing. That's perhaps not a consensus view in the UK, but it is increasingly becoming a consensus view internationally. If you've got the currency on your side and the market on your side, and certainly the government on your side, then that is starting to tick into a lot of boxes. There is the real scope that the UK is going to close the valuation differential that it has with other developed markets, and that suggests that all of the bad news priced in since 2016 is rapidly going to be priced out if we see a benign outcome to the election and subsequently the Brexit question. Then let's think about what's going on in India. The Indian market is still right in the region of its peak. Growth is slowing down in India, and there has been a significant issue with liquidity in the non-bank finance area. What that has prompted the government to do is to introduce a raft of reforms to run a fiscal deficit, and those are all rather positive outcomes, not least the cut to corporate taxes. When we look at the longer-term chart, then we can see that the price is right in the region of its all-time peak. It's been ranging below 12,000 now since the middle of 2018. We could yet see some consolidation. We could see a reversion back towards the mean. But as long as the upward bias is holding and the sequence of higher reaction lows is intact, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And then the Indian rupee has been really quite steady against a background where there are worries about growth and where there's a fiscal deficit. The rupee has actually been really very steady, and particularly relative to other regional currencies. I think it is the rupee and the outlook for the currency is one of the biggest barometers for sentiment towards India that we have. Then when we think about what's going on in China, the A-share index has been unusually quiet. That is suggestive of some intervention by the government to support the index. The H-share index was in mildly positive territory in here today, but it really does need to sustain a move back above 11,000 in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. I continue to look at the Shenzhen B shares as a barometer of appetite for risk in China, and the index was in positive territory over the course of the last couple of days, but it really does need to push back above 900 as the absolute minimum condition to begin to suggest that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Saudi Aramco IPO priced at the upper end of its range in here today. Price are valuing the company at $1.7 trillion. Oil prices were slightly steadier in response to that news. OPEC has announced that they're going to cut supply by about 500,000 barrels. That's not an especially large cut. It suggests that the status quo is going to remain intact. Oil has bounced impressively over the last couple of days. It really does need to do better than that, though. It needs to sustain the move above $65 to change the overall downward bias, or at least lower to lateral ranging bias in trading. In the industrial metals, nickel prices have pulled back below their trend mean, and this has been a very exaggerated decline. But we need to see an upward dynamic to suggest that the oversold condition is in fact ending. This move that we saw in here today seems to be quite similar to what we had at the end of October. That didn't translate into much more than a bounce before an additional decline. We're going to have to see something more impressive on the upside in order to really confirm that a low of more than short-term significance is in. The London Metals Index, or the LME Metals Index, is right at the lower side of its range. It's being weighed on by some of the industrial resources other than copper. Copper prices have been relatively well supported, but again, this is another index we need to see back above its trend mean. The continuous commodity index, however, has continued to hold this 400-point level. That is being supported by other commodities outside of the industrial resources. The move that we've had in copper, in coffee, for example, is certainly helping to suggest that there is continued demand in here. But on the other side of the equation, you have orange juice, which is plumbing the depths and does not look like a bullish pattern overall. Then I think it's also worth paying attention to what's going on in the shipping sector. The Baltic Dry Index has now bounced from the region of the trend mean. And when we look at this over not just the last 5 years, but look at a good deal of history, this is an important move. We haven't had a higher reaction load like this in at least the last year. The more important point is that having broken above 2000, it's found support in the region of the trend mean. There is the potential here that we're going to see some additional upside. It's also worth remembering that the IMO 2020 rules come into effect in January, and that is going to have a meaningful impact on the shipping industry generally. It's rather uncertain how many of the shipping companies have introduced scrubbers for their shipping stock to comply with those emissions regulations, and how many of those ships are going to be scrapped when we get towards the end of the year, bearing in mind that that's only about 3 weeks away now. That does suggest that we're going to see some additional upside in shipping costs. And then if we contrast that with the price of the dirty tanker index, we're getting a very similar condition. So it's not just about dry goods shipping, but it's also on the outlook for super tankers that prices do appear to be moving higher. The continuous commodity index is higher. Then the question is, is this being supported by recent weakness in the US dollar? The dollar index is right now in the region of the trend mean. There is, I think, clear potential that it is going to break its uptrend over the course of the next couple of months, if it doesn't do it sooner, not least because the supports for the dollar are being removed by the US government and the Federal Reserve. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.